do you think A Song of Ice and Fire defines good and bad, or just more so, is that us projecting?
I want my bad guys to be bad guys. Mm-hmm.
Is the anti-hero a modern fantasy thing?
It's using idioms that we tend to actually get. Mm-hmm. It's using references that are understandable to people at our time. And when
the
go back
does
to...
does it so well, right?
Anyway.
Welcome back to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Is modern fantasy better than classic fantasy? We're going to be talking about the differences between those two. And of course, we have to have a little bit of a versus. I don't know. Are you going to take a side on this and say one is better than the other? Or are we just going to go over the pros and cons of each?
For my main man, Bland Rand, I'm taking the classic side. I'm taking, you know, that's the side I'm fighting for today.
That's funny you bring that up, because the Wheel of Time is known as that series that blends the classic into the modern.
Yes.
So you're almost fence-sitting by picking the Wheel of Time.
Sure, but, you know, in the thumbnail, I held Lord of the Rings, and I love the books more than you love the movies, and I would say the classic book lean is definitely your classic fantasy versus the movies is the same, but it does lean a bit more into more modern tones and, like, sensibilities.
One modern thing about it is the point of view switch.
Yep.
Happens much. So when we mean classic, what do we mean by that? Because we have a couple different ways to distinguish that. Of just classic, does it just mean old? Because that, when people say the word classic could just mean literature or a story that's passed down throughout generations and can be enjoyed by all. It survived the generations. Yeah. There's that kind of term, which we've talked about we had a whole classic
what
breakdown
makes a
video.
Classic? Yeah.
This one, we're talking more so about the style. Style of classic fantasy versus modern fantasy. When you think classic, the one in your head is, oh, Lord of the Rings. When you think modern, I think we could say the shift was somewhere around A Song of Ice and Fire and Game of Thrones. Are we fair to start there? These are the definitions we're working around, you and
people
I.
People can maybe disagree with it down in the comments below, but for the sake of this discussion, let's have those as our two exemplars.
Yes, because other than those two series were the shift that you could say. No other series, of course, you've had other big fantasy series, such as Harry Potter, huge, but Harry Potter made young adults, had children fantasy and literature, exploded, one of the biggest things ever. This is just more so a style of writing that you associate with a classic versus a modern fantasy book. And you always hear people debating, this is too classic. Or this uses something this modern book that just came out uses the classic fantasy kind of tropes. And what do they mean by that in the first place? But okay, so we'll get into that. We'll see what side you're actually on, because you picked the Wheel of Time, which is interesting. So we're talking about that shift from classic fantasy to modern happened around the 90s, mm-hmm. if we were to say. Because if we were to look at J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, when he was writing that book, when he was writing that series, the term classic fantasy to them, if they said that often, would have been George MacDonald and the people he looked up to when they were saying the word classic to us is just because it happened before modern in this sense.
Sure.
So anyways, what is the first biggest difference between the two when people mean this and the pros and cons of each of those?
Sure. The number one thing when I was thinking about this topic.
Yeah.
To me is the idea of a right versus wrong, a light versus dark, and gray. So a moniker of classic fantasy is a clear delineation between good and evil. I think a common factor in modern fantasy is morality tending toward the gray. Now, you can see this in Game of Thrones, but I think it's through most fantasy. Even if there is clearly a good side, they're often playing with, flirting with, having to use evil means to accomplish a good end. And, you know, your character maybe dips down into the gray and then comes back up. But I think almost all of them kind of have that element to it.
Both your villains and heroes, where your heroes can be more anti-hero, or your villains have a more reasoning behind their evil doing. That if you look at Lord of the Rings as an example, Sauron is just evil incarnate.
Yeah.
Bad, temptation, look. All the themes that you'd put behind evil as well, Sauron. Versus who's a villain that you could say is an example of the modern day villain, the modern fantasy villain.
The thing I want to give is probably not as a not very popular book, or yeah. It is popular.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even get it, but I'm just saying it for the audience because this is one of my favorite examples of a modern, like a modern fantasy villain.
I love Lightbringer's villain.
Yes, basically, you know it. It's Andrew Andros Gile. Is one of my favorite villains ever written.
Have not read yet, but I know you hype it up.
I'm going to try and think of a better example that we both have read.
Yes.
To take the class, to take a more popular current example yeah. would be. Is that
okay?
Is that spoilers?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
Nick,
little bit.
Sorry.
Just bleep that name. Okay, we can go to the Song of Ice and Fire since that's our big example, maybe.
Fine.
Pick a villain from Song of Ice and Fire who's morally gray. All the characters pretty much are morally gray.
Sure, to stick to first book, basically all mm-hmm. of them, but I would probably lean toward maybe a Jaime mm-hmm. Lannister in the first book.
Yeah.
Leans definitely toward villain, mm-hmm. but there's at least some understanding of like why
yeah.
he is doing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's more sympathetic reasons, somewhat, barely. But yeah.
It just, the themes and the characters in modern fantasy lean more towards subjectivity and mm-hmm. not knowing exactly it's less black and white, whereas in classic fantasy, there are evil, there are orcs, there is something that is obvious to attack. And that's where you see in the, just because modern means now we're talking about contemporary stuff, there's modern sci-fi, modern fantasy that comes out that does shift, that does have the classic feel. We bring it up all mm-hmm. the time, but Sun Eater, for example, the villains in Sun Eater, keeping this very spoiler light, spoiler free, but the villains are more sort of in your black and white. So have yeah. that, although there's more, it's obviously a modern book and has modern elements to it, but immediately when you see that, do you associate and go, oh, I associate that with old timey classic when it's so black and white. So Wheel of Time, you brought that up as an example. Is it because you have your Trollocs and your...
Yeah, you got your Trollocs, you got your Mithrandir, you know, you have your the Dark One, Gryler, yeah. just like the evil guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you do also have your gray-ish villains in there as well. That's why it's a great bridge between modern and classic.
Then, which one's better? Because what is good about just having a good and bad side? And then... I want you to force yourself to say what's good about the morally gray villains. And I guess why did each one have, you like both? It depends what you read.
Yeah, it depends on what I'm into at the time. It's mm-hmm. like, have I been reading too many morally gray stories? I'm probably going to be in the mood for a more clear black and white.
Give me a bad guy.
Yeah, I want my bad guys to be bad guys. Mm-hmm. It depends on the day. However, if I had to choose, I think I like stories with a black and white morality of some type of good versus evil.
What are the benefits of that?
I think if you actually draw the line at somewhere, there's more interesting conversations in that middle of if you actually define the lines of good and evil, then you get to discuss what does make you good. What can cause a hero to fall to the dark? What can lead someone away from evil into the light? Those kind of conversations and for characters is interesting to me. If you have a morally gray world and it's just kind of all gray, then it's because it's so subjective, it kind of can mean whatever you want. And I don't find that nearly as interesting.
So when you're saying it's interesting to find, when do you cross that line into villain? Or yeah. into hero, would you say the morally gray, the modern fantasy? That's their question they're asking too. Of when do you fall into hero and villain territory? What is the? How do you juggle that?
I don't think so. I think morally gray generally means like
you don't know how to take it.
Basically, yes. Yeah. That is, you don't know if there even is good and evil. That's ultimately, I think, the question. A morally gray,
Everyone has some message. Villain to them. Everybody has some hero yes, qualities.
There is no heroes. There are no heroes. There are no villains. There are just people in different circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That, I think, would be the the difference between like a morally gray story and a good versus evil story.
Yeah, I think that's more accurate.
Because there, when you have there is the story of good versus evil, and there is some gray in the middle, but it doesn't reject the idea of there being good and evil.
Yeah.
That's very different from just there is no good and evil at all.
Yeah, that's what you got to distinguish. In the morally gray, the modern fantasy can lean into you don't know who is good or bad. Now, when we're saying the series we're bringing up is A Song of Ice and Fire for this, however, does it have that more classic sense of even though there's a bunch of morally gray characters, you know who the good guys are. You know who the villains are. You still know they're Joffrey bad, Ned good, and then you have a bunch of gray characters in between there. So even with, I guess with some of that sense, the modern fantasy, does it completely reject that? Or you can just go and you can look and go, the Starks are generally better because they uphold virtues that we assign as good, such as honor and following your word and not incest, you know, all those things that are
all
top
those
quality.
Great morally good things.
So it, I guess using, since that can be our two examples that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. So do you think A Song of Ice and Fire defines good and bad, or just more so is that us projecting good and bad? I mean, he writes very good characters, honorable characters.
Sure. I think it is kind of a spectrum of how big is your gray zone.
Yeah.
There's on one end where there is no good and evil. It's all gray. They're
literally
just,
nothing.
I would say leans into the Joe Abercrombie worlds is like, there is no good and evil. There's just people in situations. There's no good. There's no evil. I think that's probably the extreme.
That's a better example than, to show that there's no.
And then on, say, the Tolkien end, being where there's a very, very fine sliver of gray, but good and evil are very much prominent and clear. And then as you go from one end of the spectrum to another, that is, when you tend more toward the total gray is more modern. When you tend toward the more clear delineation, then classic.
Yeah, I agree
with that
too.
At least that's the tone and feel I get from
it. Oh, yeah. Joe Abercrombie, so we've only read First Law. You've read some standalones too.
Yeah.
By the way, The Devils is our book club of the month for our Patreon. Got that slipped in. So if you want to join our book club, link in the description below to join our book club. However, with Joe Abercrombie's books, you're right. I think it's very clear there in the grimdark genre as well. You don't know. You're rooting for the people, or you feel attached to them because you have their point of view. Yeah. And you get their inner thoughts, and they're quirky and funny, and you're somehow attached to these people who are very morally gray. In many regards, just bad.
Yeah, basically everyone's so bad that you're just like, I guess it's gray.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the difference then between anti-hero and making you an anti-hero versus antagonist? Is it the anti-hero we have something to root for them? Or how would you define that? Because is the anti-hero a modern fantasy thing? I'd associate it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's just more of a modern thing. It's not like it's never happened in classic stories, but it's certainly more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think the whole idea of between anti-hero, their goals align with a more heroic goal, but they have, you know, evil means.
Yeah.
An antagonist, who it's not a villain, is an obstacle in the way of a heroic goal.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of difference. Which do you like between like a modern morality or the classic?
My cop out is I like both.
Yeah.
I would want the A Song of Ice and Fire style, not the First Law style or the Lord of the Rings, the in-between of having there's few good and few bad, you know, the extremes, but most are in between. Something along those lines of, I enjoy that I like when you can have, if you were to have three characters, if there's only three character options that you have, I wouldn't want two to be all good, one to be all bad. I would want one to be all good, one to be all bad, and one to be that dead middle zone. So if I was switching in a point of view between three different characters, I want all the tasty.
You want a bit of variety between them.
Which I feel at situations with Sun Eater, for example, I think does lay into that a bit more. You know the bad.
Yeah, there's... You get all three.
Yeah, you get all three. And how much? It depends. So that's my preference. But also, despite preferences aside, what do you think is the Morally Gray? You were talking to how you prefer classic. If you had to say for Morally Gray characters in modern fantasy, what has it improved on the genre? Do you think it improved some things?
I'm not sure if it's necessarily improvement, because I think a lot of the tends to be the idea of a Morally Gray character, the supposed advantage is being able to show how, the difficulty of, the difficulty of actually having morality as black and white.
Yeah.
That often in, there's one thing of your belief of what's good and evil, but then when you're put to the test and you get to prove your conviction, it's a lot harder. And so that's what it's trying to get out of you. If whatever you say is good, now let's throw you into that scenario and twist it. And do you still believe it? And that's the fun. It's the mental exercise of, do I still believe what's good is good?
In one way,
or evil is evil, vice versa.
Yeah, that's another big difference are characters in modern versus classic fantasy, where characters in classic fantasy, you typically assign with the good characters are follow honor and respectful and the chivalry, something to look up to. You can look up to these characters. These are paragons. These are examples of what to do and follow, versus the modern fantasy is more so asking the questions of internal trauma, internal turmoil, or the flaws of a man, the flaws and idiots. So
I would kind of disagree with that, because most of my favorite examples of classic fantasy that has very clear good and evil, you do have your good characters dip into the dark, dip into the evil. You see their potential for evil and even act. So they do kind of play with those sides, but at one, generally they will fall in one end or the other. And so that's very different. So the reason why in Lord of the Rings, Aragorn, who is your paragon of good, he's not the main character, because Frodo is, and Frodo he is a good character. He's good.
Good guy,
but
yes.
He can be tempted to the dark, and he falls into it sometimes, and you see the potential for evil in him, and then he comes out on the side of the light.
I mean, you have Boromir in the series too. Obviously, Boromir's all the temptation there, the evil that you're being tempted toward.
So there's plenty of that tension of hard decisions so it's not exclusive to Morally Gray characters that you get interesting internal turmoil between characters.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that's two separate things. The turmoil happens. It's more so modern fantasy. By trauma, I mean mental illness or topics of you look into a character, you get a lot of first-person point of views, and dealing with mental illness, trauma, or something that makes you more, quote-unquote, relatable or something to the reader, rather than when you read Lord of the Rings, you're not getting a breakdown into a Kaladin type character. Though there's a distinguish there of Frodo being tempted and falling and the folly of man. There's all those themes, of course, and it doesn't mean that your character's flat at all. But would you agree that modern fantasy leans more into having your characters feel, because of the morally gray nature, just we're going to go off that theme, your characters feel more, not like real people, I don't want to say. I'm just trying to put in my head lore. My head canon is classics tend to have something that is you want to be and you want to strive towards. So, for example, even Frodo or Aragorn, any character in Lord of the Rings, it's an example of it's a warning message, or it's something to go, hey, you want, look up to this character, look what they did. This is something to admire or
beware
of. Whereas modern fantasy, that you obviously have that with your modern fantasy characters, but it's also looking at, rather than them being an example, you being able to relate in a way. Or is there a relatability factor modern fantasy is trying to get into, is the question.
It could be. I believe this is a Rocchio quote, or
if it's a cool quote, just attribute to
it's
Rocchio.
Probably. Yeah. But the sentiment of the Rocchio, this is Tolkien. Same guy, basically. No, it's the idea that the reason why we we humans like mercy is because that we know we're guilty ourselves, and so we identify with.
That's Chesterton.
No, I thought that was from our On Fairy Stories.
Yeah, well, in the essay from the reference Chesterton. So there was an essay on Fairy Stories. Tolkien quoted Chesterton saying that children prefer justice because while children prefer justice,
Children prefer justice because they are absent.
No, children prefer justice because they're innocent, whereas we prefer mercy because we are wicked.
Yeah.
Something along, it's thank close you for getting to the that.
Good quote. actually remember.
It's not exactly that. It's close.
We talked about that somewhat with Rocchio during our interview as well. But
got it. Yeah.
Point being that idea of why we like morally gray characters is because it is inviting to see another character that is wicked, and then we can identify with that, with wickedness, and go, hey, maybe there's hope for us yet, or hey, just because you have committed great sins, done great evil, you could also still end up on the side of good, or you could still end up doing something for the good of all.
Like, you mentioned, is it why we like redemption stories?
Yeah. I mean, it falls in a similar track.
Do we like redemption because we know that we're also capable of evil?
I would imagine so. Actually, I was watching this YouTube video that I don't quite remember his name. I will try and bring it up so we can put it in the link description. But he was talking about The Closer Look. That's the YouTube channel.
No, that was a Chesterton video.
That was probably. Chesterton probably has something on it. This guy probably quoted Chesterton. No, I would be surprised.
No, in 1902, Chesterton uploaded this video. But what was the video?
The video was about how to make a hateable villain.
Oh, was I watching that with you?
You were watching part of it with me.
Oh, I was there. Okay.
I watched the rest of it.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. I watched what happened in the rest of the video?
Basically, the thesis is, why do we hate certain villains and why do we detest certain villains?
Yeah.
Like, there are your big bad, your Saurons, your Voldemorts, which, yeah, they're bad and they do all these awful things, but we don't hate them as an audience member nearly as much. Yet we will hate a worm tongue. We will hate a, what's the lady from Harry Potter? Everyone hates Umbridge.
The teacher, yeah.
Yeah, Umbridge. Mm-hmm. We hate them because, and so there's plenty of theories of, it is a character that is more related to someone we know and experience.
Okay.
But instead, the theory is humans have evolved to be able to identify negative traits in ourselves. And so a reason why we hate these certain characters is because it brings out a negative emotion in us. And so we see it, and it's therapeutic almost to hate that which is a part of ourselves. So applying that to morally gray characters, I think that is the connection. And so you are more emotionally involved with characters with flaws similar to your own.
And a human emotion that if you do something bad, you feel regret. Mm-hmm. So anti-heroes, sometimes you see the anti-hero who wants to do better, has to do something bad, doesn't want to. They're doing it because they're in this situation where maybe a good example of a villain who is, Sauron, to just stick with Sauron, of that classic villain versus a modern fantasy villain that we could mention that isn't in books, but everyone will know this villain is Thanos, of maybe the moral grayness or the character difference is you see Thanos sacrificing Gamora and actually not want to and actually tear up and feel regret and that remorse, which makes the villain more, Thanos actually thinks what he's doing is morally right. So is it that delineation, that lines of where your villains or your characters in these stories, it's sometimes not even that you don't know who's good, who's evil, but the goals that Thanos has or that a modern fantasy character has, do you believe they're doing genuine good? Their intent could even be wholesome. And their intent could be, I want to cut away half the universe with bad math, of course, and bad stuff. But however, I want to cut out half the universe, and I think this is the right thing to do. Is there some sort of way where the villains or the morally gray characters that modern fantasy authors try to make you relate to the evil or try to make you sympathize with evil versus in the classic sense, the characters are, there's nothing, we don't, I guess we sympathize through Frodo's plight. We sympathize through his things, but it's very clear that when Frodo's going down that temptation path or the thing to avoid, it's, hey, avoid the temptation, avoid this evil, fight to endure versus this is, well, not necessarily message of, again, there's so many different stories to bring up. I'm keeping to the big ones.
To this point, yeah. Do you think it's an improvement on classic fantasy is having this morally gray characters and these themes? Do you think that's an improvement over classic fantasy?
The right answer is it's different. The right answer is it's different because there's pros and cons to each, where the improvement in the character aspect is, if you're to keep it in that framework we just discussed with modern fantasy, you get to explore traumas and insight and more, some moral complexity to, hey, what is right, what is wrong? And if you're kind of feeling that, if you want a more morally ambiguous message at the end, because I love endings where you don't know how to take it sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's all good. Now, sometimes what you can...
I have a harsh statement that I'm not sure I actually truly believe, but I want to bring it out and discuss a little bit.
I'm a little bit scared.
Morally gray stories is just coping for maladjusted people.
Maladjusted people.
It is right. The reason why people like morally gray stories is because at least at that time, or someone who maybe prefers it, has given up on trying to be better and would like justification for their own evil misdeeds.
Now, why couldn't you say this in your hot takes video? Wrong video.
I don't even know if I truly believe that, but taking everything we've talked about here of a morally gray characters is to explore our own weaknesses and kind of to delve into them and just in some way justify them. Is that more of a coping mechanism compared to something with morally righteous, clear delineations of good and evil, of struggle for the good, where that's more of a reflection of like, no, you have to fight. You don't get to give up. You don't get to have excuses of why you did evil. You do the good anyway, and it's all about the good fight to be a better person.
So the morally gray isn't fighting to be a better person. It's just what is a better
person? It's a justify.
It's a to do evil or?
To do evil or to at least fail to do good.
Mm. But it wouldn't, in that morally gray sense, have redemptions? But wouldn't people want to seek that out as well to, there's morally gray characters, but then you are redeemed in the end? Is some of the points of like maybe it's people seeking or wanting. I guess, okay, but here's two ways of looking at it.
But starting to go down the same, that kind of follows with the same statement of you're trying to justify your own misdeeds.
I'm,
and like,
I'm granting
you are redeemed, but you could have just not done the evil.
I'm going in your head, like granting you, if that's what you're thinking, then that's what people are doing when it comes to redemption stories. Now, on the flip side, is you're just overthinking it.
Yeah.
the boring answer is, well, people just enjoy those types of stories. And I don't think when I read Glockta to justify my torture, you know, there's some type of way where morally gray characters, I think we talked about this in, remember our trope breakdown, not trope breakdown, our what type of reader are you?
Yeah.
One of the breakdowns, I just came up with these arbitrary categories. One of them was on the character focused reader of the psychologist, I called them. The Abercrombie, the people that love Abercrombie, the people that love Lonesome Dove and Larry McMurtry, if you love these kind of stories where when you read a character just feels so real and they have flaws, wants, needs that you don't know how to take, they are the way they are. And you're a psychologist in that sense of just, this is a real person. And so a lot of the today, we're saying morally gray a lot, but a lot of modern fantasy too, take away the morally gray aspect and it could just be simply a deep character dive and introspection. Because whereas classic fantasy, I guess this was the whole point I was making about not the trauma or inner turmoil. Of course, Frodo goes through his quest and you have all the characters in the Fellowship have their own, a lot of them, hey, paragons and examples. But when you look today, it's more so that character breakdown and introspection of who are you? How does this character actually function?
That does seem to be a tendency, is you do get to be more inside the head of your characters for modern fantasy compared to classic, where classic, you do get to know a lot about your character but it's through their dialogue, their action. You don't often, even their inside their own head is not nearly as introspective as a lot of modern fantasy.
Yeah. So I think that would be if you just like character work, you'd read more modern. Not that there's not good characters in classic, but to your point of, do people read it to what? They're misaligned or misadjusted. What word did you use? They're pubescent idiots. Or
yeah. Again, I'm just saying the statement for the sense of discussion. I don't actually really believe it that much.
There's parts of truth to it. You gotta feel
the idea that the idea that morally gray stories is there to justify your own wickedness and to cope with it instead of fighting to be a better person.
I think both you could fight that. I'd say both have that aspect to it. But do you have anything else on the character specifically? Because I think that those are the big things: moral grayness, introspection, and trauma. Those types of themes that you would see with characters now versus in your classic fantasy. Which again, we're saying a story that drops today. Of this is just one example because I haven't continued reading the series. We haven't yet, but of Blood and Fire. By Ron Cahill. You read that book one, that's classic fantasy.
Yeah.
That's classic through and through. It has all the classic stuff. And even though it's written in the 2020s, it's still classic fantasy.
The classic tropes, the classic tone, the classic morality. We're talking about morality, the style. All that stuff.
Yes. Yeah. So the next point we have, we can always go back to that too, but we got characters, morality, the themes discussed, world building. The world building with classic versus modern fantasy, what do you see as the big differences of what they used to do versus now?
This is the one where I think there's a lot of in between, because if you were to say the same thing, that classic fantasy, it leans more into the mythos and the kind of not really specific magic. What's the correct a soft magic soft. System?
Yes,
I'd say modern fantasy also has plenty of soft magic systems. Mm-hmm. Maybe the tendency is with modern fantasy, you kind of get more into the weeds of a technical where you turn magic into a science. I'd say that if I were to pick anything of a moniker of modern fantasy is like psi magic, you know,
psi fantasy, psi magic stuff. Yeah.
Basically, you turn the magic into a science.
Mm.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
How do you see it?
Yeah, I think I can sometimes associate in my head, I don't know if other people listen and do, but when you say hard magic, I can associate that more with modern fantasy, because you don't often look at a hard magic system and think, oh, that's classic right there. My classic stories do a hard magic system. I think it gets the hard magic, you use a better word, of the science of it, because maybe more of the fantasy is explain, because when you bring up some series such as Malazan, even though it's okay, it does have way more modern things to it, but I would look at the Malazan world as more classic, even though the characters and other aspects are more modern. There's a feel you get when you say classic fantasy world that feels more removed. It feels more mystical. It feels more that mythos, that epic, something that is almost maybe the tendency with modern fantasy, when it feels like modern fantasy, is they have to explain themselves, make a science out of it. This is how the world works and functions.
I think plenty of classic fantasy does have your hard magic systems of it. To give the bare bones example of like, I cast fireball and a ball of fire comes out of my hand. And depending I need mana to cast. And like, that is a hard magic system.
Take the ring from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it does vary. That little bit less so, but close. It does have some mystical properties.
It has rules.
It does have rules.
Hard magic is, what are the rules? You put on ring, you turn invisible. The Mistwraiths see it, that kind of stuff.
But So that's a hard magic system when there's like clear rules and understanding.
Yeah.
Where you get into modern is when you start treating the magic like engineering. And so people using the magic for like, how is it fully integrated in the world? How are you using it to basically replicate the tech of today effectively? Then there's using the magic in unintended ways. It's basically it feels like the magic has evolved from where it started. Modern is like, hey, look, there was this magic system and humans have twisted and used the rules to build something new. And like they were tinkering with it. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the scientification of magic. That's like the hallmark of modern fantasy magic.
Get so in the weeds, they're thinking, oh, how do the crops work? How do we, whereas then classic fantasy, how do you juxtapose that?
I mean, it's the air of mystery. There, you can have plenty of answers and details. All like you look at Tolkien, like Tolkien has details on how the fauna work.
And
like,
the trees. Yes.
The trees have history. Yep. So like it's not about like a lack of details, but there is a sense of mystery. There is a sense of mythos, this grand scale where you don't get into the weeds necessarily of you don't see people taking the magic and then evolving it and humans using the magic for something it wasn't intended for.
A definitive modern fantasy series is Stormlight.
Yeah.
And when you look at Stormlight's world, I feel as though when I look at Roshar, I understand how it functions and works. And you could give Roshar to me. Of course, there's mysteries that are set up and I don't know we haven't gone to the Rushy Isles, all those outside places. However, when you give me Roshar, I go, oh, I understand Roshar. You can be just as immersed, but have an understanding. Whereas you look at Middle Earth and you feel, yes, you understand the landscape. You get that. But it's almost, there's a well to it. There's a grandeur. Even though Roshar is grand, I'm very poorly explaining this because it comprehension, not as in, I guess it does come to that science of you look at Tolkien, you look at the land of Middle Earth, and it doesn't feel like it was science.
Do people see the magic as beyond human understanding?
Yeah.
Or do they see it as something to be tamed?
Hmm.
Modern magic is something to be tamed and controlled.
Yeah, yeah.
Classic magic is something to be used, wielded, you know, train in, but ultimately not change, not to control it, not to twist it to your own purposes.
Tolkien's view of just nature in general, you see this throughout Lord of the Rings as well, of he loved to escape and loved nature so much and didn't like the industrialization and what was happening to the world. So when he was escaping into fantasy, he you see this in all of it. It's symbolic of look at the Ents and look at all the nature and explaining all the trees to every nitty gritty detail and look at the evil orcs and industrialization, all that bad, bad, bad. Look at that. And so I guess when you look at the classic fantasy sense of maybe here's a term of doing it. In the classic fantasy, it's you adapt to nature, and in modern fantasy, nature adapts to you, in a sense of because you're using modern senses of in Roshar. How does the magic system work? How does the storm affect this? And how do we change?
How do we use this to change our surroundings? Yeah, it's very industrialized.
Yes.
Now, which do you think is better?
Oh.
Which is that modern feel? Is that evolved fantasy? Or is it just a cheaper, weaker version of just sci-fi?
I think the classic, if you look at the bell curve, the classic has the extremes. Mm-hmm. Where if you were to say, give me a classic fantasy book, and it either can hit 10 out of 10 or 1 out of 10. Whereas, no, not everybody will agree with this, but for me, the first book of Molazin, which is that more classic world feel, and by classic, again, I mean that the descriptors we've been using, but I could feel so lost and go, I don't get this at all. Versus you give me Middle Earth, I feel completely immersed. I feel completely involved because it's something with it, how much you trust the author and versus modern fantasy, I feel more so can hit because you're explained enough to where you go, I comprehend and understand this. But then the flaws of that are, okay, then you're going to start asking a lot more questions because if a lot's being explained to you, the scientification of it, then you're more likely to then have more questions because they're giving you some answers to things. So you're going to start maybe trying to find holes in it versus I can't find holes in Molazin's world. You get what I mean? Reading book two now, being immersed in the world of Molazin. I don't know if there's a name for the world, but Molazin universe. But then when it's not like I can pick apart and go, oh, that's wrong, because it's beyond it. You get what I mean? Of one, modern fantasy, I guess, can be more critiquable in the sense, oh, you did something right or wrong, versus how can I say, even though I didn't like book one of even though I didn't like Gardens of the Moon, I can't look in the world and go something was wrong. It's just, oh, I wasn't immersed because I felt I didn't understand the stakes of the story quite yet. I didn't know what was important. But it's not that it was breaking its own rules. The more you science it, the more you create rules, the more chance you have of breaking them. So I guess that's somewhat of what it is. What do you think?
To me, if you were to take that whole bell curve in the extremes,
yeah,
then for world building, classic fantasy is on one end,
yeah,
of the highest amount of divinity, mysticism, like the air of mystery of like this world is beyond you, that as much as you'll understand, you'll never understand its totality. It is meant to be grander than yourself. And then sci-fi, not always true again, tendencies, is the other extreme of like, when done well, you feel like you're in the cosmos. You feel like you're a part of the cosmic, and that even, you know, the divinity is within reach, because then you break down the rules of the universe and things.
Project Hail Mary, if we're going full sci-fi.
Yeah, but if you feel a part of that grander vision of the world, and maybe modern fantasy is kind of like that in between of the divinity is a little closer to Earth, but it's not so understandable as maybe a really good sci-fi can do.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's that in between the two extremes.
Yeah. I think you definitely summarize it really well, even by saying the scientification of the world seems to be what modern fantasy does.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, I guess what would you consider Stormlight's a big one, a world that is definitely modern fantasy?
Lightbringer. I gave the example from Andrew Scowl, one of my favorite villains. It is one of the best examples of modern fantasy magic.
Nice.
It's, it would be my quintessential example, personally.
Okay. Got it. Well, besides that, then, do you have another difference between classic and modern? Because themes, characters, world building. Got another.
I mean, personally, I would say we have the last two kind of sections.
Yep.
First, tone.
Tone, yes.
I mean, generally, classic fantasy is purple prose, poetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fancy words. And then you have modern fantasy is more guttural, short, stochastic sentences.
Stochastic, nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
I read sometimes.
Watch, that's not even a word.
It's a word. I used it correctly.
Staccatos, yeah. But yes, you get more, your prose in modern fantasy can feel, it does seem when you look back, that archaic text, that you associate that with fancy. Mm-hmm. You associate that with purple. Modern fantasy, which we can say, Patrick Rothfuss has very modern fantasy prose, even though it's elegant.
Yeah.
Some would say. I wouldn't. But then you also have your other modern fantasy prose, which is your Pierce Brown type prose. That's sci-fi. I know we're using some sci-fi examples.
The Sword of Kaigan.
Yes. Emma Wang has very modern prose. Yep. And I guess what distinguishes it versus what, I guess if you say that it's not as archaic or purpley or poetic, what is good about modern fantasy prose then? What's the goal of modern fantasy prose? Because if the goal of classic was to sound pretty and catch the eye and be profound, what's the goal of modern fantasy?
I think there is a distinction here that we probably should think about.
Yeah.
And modern fantasy in and of itself is using, of course, because it's written in the modern day, it is using words that us people living in the modern day tend to understand. It's using idioms that we tend to actually get. Mm-hmm. It's using references that are understandable to people at our time. And when you
when
go back
does
to
it so well, right?
Anyway,
if you stayed silent the rest of the episode, war flashbacks came through your eyes.
But no, then you have the comparison with a lot of classic fantasy, honestly, just classic books to us sound like they're using fancy poetic words. And ultimately, they're just using words that we tend to not use anymore. And that it's just from a different era. And that if you were to talk to someone at that time, they wouldn't see it as particularly poetic or fancy words. It's the words of their time, the idioms of their era. But then, so sometimes that could be a difference. So the best example is like a book for me. Pride and Prejudice to people today.
Yeah.
Uses very poetic language and really fancy tone and prose. But I wouldn't say that, like, the book at the time probably was not considered that way. It was read in far more, it would be considered modern for its own time. It wouldn't be fancy, but it's only fancy to us because
that's how they spoke.
That's how they spoke. Mm-hmm. So there is that difference of some classic fantasy maybe is seen as being, you know, highfalutin and fancy and all, you know, extravagant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the words of their time.
What's an example of that's not the case? Because also, I'm not a Jane Austen expert, but I assume you're right on that kind of stuff because it does sound fancy, quite agreeable. And it's all these terms. But then is there an example of these when you read a modern fantasy book that feels classic, you get writers that are do have that feel, that classic feel.
Sure. I mean,
maybe Guy Gavriel Kay.
Sure.
Maybe
if you were to compare him, he's, you know, author in the modern day uses a more classical poetic style to his writing.
Ken Liu, would you say?
Depending on his work, I guess.
Yeah.
He plays with it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say the first book of Grace of Kings. I don't know if it's, I would still say that feels like modern fantasy to me.
Mm.
But how would you delineate the difference?
Between the prose of modern fantasy? Yeah, no, I agree with archaic, very purpley, but also I don't want to say you can't be purpley with modern fantasy, but the prose that you associate with modern fantasy, this doesn't mean the book comes out and that means this is what the kind of prose is, but is more reachable. I think a lot of the goal of modern fantasy throughout these themes we've had of what are the themes, how do characters work, how is the world, all of it is trying to, again, reach down to the reader. And if we're to say Sanderson as modern fantasy prose, just one of many examples, he's not the arbiter of all modern fantasy prose, but the way he describes writing is he's using his text and the words on page. It's like a stained glass window it's just like looking through a clear window of his prose is not meant to be admired or stared at for too long. You're just supposed to more easily to digest the story. Whereas that purple prose we're talking about is a stained glass window of you admire the artwork of the text and also the story. Now, modern fantasy, just how you can look at it, is if the text is trying to just get right and punch right to the reader, it's just trying to get across story and you don't want them to focus too much on the prose itself, then that seems to be trend toward the modern fantasy sense. Not that you can't have these amazing writers, Guy Gavriel Kay and dozens of infinitesimal other great writers, but the trend seems to be in the modern fantasy sense of trying to get the reader experience to be as focused or narrow as possible, whether you want to make the world more scientifically understandable in your fantasy world, or you want your theme to more connect to what is right or wrong, or you want the character to be a psychoanalyst of how does this person work and function? What are their mental illnesses, their traumas, et cetera. Even with the pros, it's just trying to go that the pros can then remove from all of that. I guess Modern Fantasy pros is trying to just make you if that is explained properly, I think that that's the difference.
If I'm understanding you correctly, yeah. Modern pros, Modern Fantasy pros tends to be more approachable, and that its aim and goal is to reach more people, for people to understand basically the story, the characters, the themes a lot more clearly, and not let the actual prose, the words on the page, get in the way.
Not as more marketable, yeah. In a way. Or even
now,
you're
if really that's good. The advantage, what do you think is the disadvantage to that modern style of prose?
People that, if you want to focus on prose, I mean, I think you can accomplish both, where you have Scott Lynch or Joe Abercrombie and these writers who have awesome prose and good stories on top of it. Well, some of them, you know, I won't state that for every Joe Abercrombie book, but you have you can get across good character stories and all that, and also prose that you can admire. So you can be both. They're not in isolation entirely, but the disadvantage is if you do enjoy prose, if you're somebody who likes that kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. you want to, when you're reading a book, you want to focus on the words actually being said rather than just getting across story. Because I know everybody that's a Sanderson fan, even Sanderson's fans, when this happened in the article of Sanderson is not your God, or yeah, Sanderson is your God. That was the article title. And this was an article written by somebody who was invited to Sanderson's house. You know this first, but was invited to Sanderson's house and was there to interview him and write a story about Sanderson. And Sanderson, you know, treated him to some dinner, chatted with him. He said to the writer to not include some stuff because there was some personal stuff in his life. He's like, hey, if you don't mind just not putting this stuff in. Well, the writer did. He put that stuff in, trashed Sanderson a lot. And one of the things he was looking down upon Sanderson was about how amateur his prose is. And so he would go to the conventions and he'd go to Sanderson fans and say, how could you like Sanderson? Look at this line he wrote and all this. And he would say all these things about Sanderson. And the fans would respond going like, oh, I love his worlds and his characters. That's what I love about his books and this stuff. And well, the guy that writing the article was so focused on, well, look at the writing. The writing is, look at this. So I guess when you're coming, people just come into a book with different mindsets of some people will be instantly off put with reading some Sanderson books. Most of them are just written the same way because it's not focusing on the art of the crafting the words and paragraphs together. It is just writing to get across the thing. So that's the bad part. You're just going to be off putting to some people initially. Now the benefit is the opposite could be true. If people are off put by, they don't want to be distracted when they're reading, they're there for story, character, and that's what modern fantasy will get you. The moniker of modern fantasy is let's just get right to it. Hey, even in the modern fantasy that does sound good, because you can do both, Sanderson, you know it is true. You can do both. And Abercrombie is a great example of that. Of it's both works very well and it sounds very pretty, but also gets across story. It feels like not a clear window or a stained glass window. It feels like you're looking through a telescope. You know, I'm sure. Just trying to say another thing you look through. I got nothing else. What else has glass? It's not a window. I don't know. But in that way. So do you agree more so? Because again, I am using these examples thinking, okay, if Stormlight is the example of modern fantasy and Tolkien is the example of classic, that's the difference. Because there's so many exceptions we can't bring up. But what do you think?
Oh yeah, generally. Overall, the approachability is the number one advantage of modern fantasy prose. The biggest disadvantage is the story itself can only take you, I think, so far. Like it can really move a great story can really move you, but a great story framed in the right way and said with beautiful prose elevates it to another level. The framing of a story really matters, and the framing to me is like the prose. So that's why I would give, you know, classic fantasy the edge for that. I've read plenty, we're a classic fantasy story where ultimately the story is not that interesting. And yet the prose is so good, it elevates the rest of it, where I'm like, man, if this was told in modern framing, modern prose, I would hate this. But because it's told so well, I'm
enthralled. What's an example of that?
Tad Williams.
Oh.
Tad Williams, the Dragonbone Chair series. I liked the first book quite a bit. But ultimately, I wasn't that interested in the story. Like, character, story, all that stuff. Could care less. Mm-hmm. But damn, the prose was amazing. I just loved reading his words. And it carried him for so far for me. And then the sequel books for me, like, it's fine. But point being, I think you need both. So I'll give the edge to classic.
Both is good. another point then.
Also, something I did want to get at is, like, yeah, with how much we've talked about of modern fantasy being, like, more direct to the point,
mm-hmm,
I would also say modern fantasy tends to be longer too. That seems to be one of the aspects of, like, modern fantasy is just these gigantic chonker books. And then you look at the massive classic fantasy books and it's like, oh, that's their omnibus edition. They took three books and made it one normal modern fantasy book.
Mm-hmm.
Like Lord of the Rings, like, oh man, that's a chonky book. That's three books in there. Well, technically six if you're pedantic. He wrote as one, but...
But publishing had made him split it.
Yeah. But think about that. Of, like, when it came out, it was three books. And then you put it together in one. Like, you got that trilogy. And it's the size of one modern fantasy novel. So you tell the whole story in one. Oh, that's another aspect I kind of see in the modern prose versus classic prose.
I have a feeling if they let him publish more, Tolkien would have went longer.
Oh, yeah. Now that maybe
if publishing was different back in the day, he would have kept going.
That is probably the bigger reason why. Well, I think there's two reasons why people are writing longer books now. It's like publishing has changed,
yeah,
but also the nature of writing, the fact that people don't have to hand write their books, mm-hmm, or even use a typewriter, that they can use a computer. Computers are a big reason why books can be longer.
Mm.
So I believe I believe Neil Gaiman. Would write,
yeah,
almost all of his books handwritten first, his first, mm-hmm, draft. And you look at his books are significantly smaller than a lot of other authors in his niche.
He's getting hand cramps all day.
Yeah. you're not gonna sit and write a 1,000-page novel by hand. Not gonna happen.
Yeah. And that, oh God, yeah.
That sounds painful.
It does. And I know, I'm sure there's other authors like that too, because there's, oh man. No, I think that's the only one on top of mind, because I knew we knew that about, is there anybody else that does in the modern fantasy sense? Because who else writes short?
One that's kind of weird
Susanna Clarke. She had a long with Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, but I shouldn't commit to it because I think she does the same thing. I think.
Okay.
Okay. Don't quote me. But yeah, you had something too?
George R. R. Martin does something similar only writes on like a Windows 95 or something. I don't know. He has a certain computer that he only writes on. And it's weird and clunky and I don't know why he does that, but
yeah,
whatever.
It's probably why he can't finish the book.
Probably.
But another difference between modern and classic in my head I think about is pacing. So for modern fantasy, do you associate that with faster pace, and do you associate classic fantasy with slower pace?
Oh yeah, just right off the bat, like just a definitive yes across the board.
Even though you see classic fantasies as shorter books, it's still a slower pace. Why is that? Does the prose do that? What feels faster when you're reading modern?
I mean, modern, just a lot more stuff generally happens. Scenes tend to be shorter, where maybe a classic fantasy book is overall shorter, but less generally happened, or you were shown less.
You're shown less, yeah.
Versus modern fantasy has a way more scenes, way more like chapters, even if they're shorter.
Way more Subway Surfers that you have to scroll through. So you need the attention needs to be grabbed. You have to have things happening.
Yeah, all the time. Every chapter has to end on basically a cliffhanger.
A little bit of everything all of the time. Anything and everything. Anything and everything all of the time. That is a top tier.
Top tier Netflix special.
Oh.
Bo Burnham.
That was awesome. That was, I think, the COVID movie.
Oh, yeah. It's also, what a mind, like, the best way to experience that was, going on Netflix and just seeing, like, oh, Bo Burnham has a comedy special? I loved Bo Burnham's previous specials. This will be some fun stand-up. And then just sitting and watching this, like, what the hell am I watching? And did I click the wrong thing? And it just keeps going and going. And you're like, where are we going with this? It's lovely.
White woman.
White woman's Instagram.
So many bangers in there.
So many.
Jeffrey Bays. Wow. That one, I've only watched it once. Oh, well, I've probably listened to the songs a bunch.
Songs are good.
That is definitely a modern style film. that through and through. That does not fit into the classic sense. I guess that, is there any other difference between the two? Or do you think we covered it as far as themes, characters? We talked about most of the factors.
I'll throw the more obvious one back. The tendency for classic fantasy to take place in a medieval setting.
Yes.
Probably should have mentioned that too. Like technologically speaking, generally is where it is, where modern fantasy can and does take place in medieval settings. Will more often than not be in alternative technological and periods. So
that's also true. Yes.
Those are the differences. But now that we've talked about it, I'm still standing on, if gun to my head.
Gun to your head.
I'd pick classic fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
What would you pick after our discussion? Which one's better? Is modern fantasy an evolved version? Is it improved?
Hmm. Well, just out of my natural wanting to disagree with you, I'll say sure. But out of my my actual opinion is the gun would go off. Because there's too much. I think the thing that actually with what books have done now, or just the books we read, this is kind of arbitrary and subjective to, what we feel classic is, what we feel modern is does this kind of thing. Classic doesn't have a chokehold on morally good and bad. And just as modern doesn't have a, Sunny, there's a blend of that. The books we read are going to be a blend. I think whatever the story that you set up, whatever you set up your expectations and what should be paid off in that story. I don't want to get set up expecting one thing and going like, okay, I'm getting myself into a series that is going to have these defined limits. And then this is very spoiler free, but then let's say book six, which this isn't the case. Book six of Sun Eater then gets into like, look, actually the bad guys and the orcs actually have a point, and they're eating people because they need to feed their babies. And you're going through all this stuff of like the orcs actually need to, I shouldn't get too into it, but the orcs in Lord of the Rings, for example, are actually doing it because they're trying to feed their children and go to the market, and the humans actually have been doing, trying to
flip
that on you. That's
actually a significant change over time in D&D lore. Used to be orcs were centered as, evil, D&D has a character alignment, and orcs were, as a race, like, evil. And there does tend to be a tendency for modern D&D lore has been updated and changed, where less and less creatures are actually just inherently evil. They're often very just neutral, and so there are good orcs, and there are also bad orcs. There is no such thing as, all of them are bad. So that was actually a significant change to D&D, is orcs are no longer the evil race. They are just one among many, and there's no one's good, no one's evil. It depends on the person.
Well, I actually don't have a problem with that. It's more so if the story sets up with this. So book one, you're reading Fellowship, and then Return of the King is like the plot twist is, they were good all along. Yeah. You know, it's more so if you set that up properly, and in a modern fantasy world, the orcs can be good. Yeah. I'm okay with all that. It's just stick to your guns and pay that off.
Yeah.
Don't try to flip and use both, because then you won't accomplish anything if you're going for everything. That typical thing. But yeah. I guess Dungeons and Dragons wasn't that. I imagine that was influenced a lot by Tolkien.
Yeah.
And all the kind of orcs and different races that you get in D&D. I guess that is a case where it's
evolved into its own thing, but
yeah.
Yeah, it was certainly inspired.
Okay.
Heavily.
Huh. Well, we answered today, modern fantasy versus classic fantasy. Do you agree with our descriptions of them? Let us know down below. But I don't think we missed very much on the differences. I'd be surprised, because we did 20 minutes of notes beforehand. So I think we sleuthed all the internet for these differences. Let us know what you think. Rich, anything you want to sign off with?
Just that classic fantasy is better. Fight me. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.